This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Bill Rajos, Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, joins me as my colleague and co-host. We're going to Ukraine, and we welcome John Hardy of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies to comment on the headlines out of London about Ukraine. In these last frantic days, all eyes on Syria, but in the meantime, headlines. The fall of Assad is a disaster for Putin, writes London. Rebel success in Syria is a humiliation for Putin, writes London. And then this, Zelensky endorses Trump call to end war in Ukraine. This headline comes out of a meeting that is called a spontaneous summit, not only by President-elect Trump in Paris to participate in the rededication of the Notre Dame, but President Zelensky of Ukraine was present, and the three met in a spontaneous special summit. And in that time, Mr. Zelensky said, yes, I'm ready to end the war as you are. It was a surprising development coming out of days of hectic headlines about Syria. And then we have this in these last hours. Zelensky says 400,000 Ukrainian troops killed or injured in war. The London Telegraph interpretation of this number suddenly. Casualty figures released after Trump publishes data as evidence of reason why war must end. Mr. Hardy, a very good day to you. This looks like the presidents have made a decision, but it's hard to say. There's some vague language here about what ending the war looks like. Your measure of these remarks out of Paris, and what does the war look like now? Does it appear that Kyiv is taking a position where it's ready to negotiate? Good evening to you, John.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me back on the show. Yeah, so Trump obviously continues to push for a quick peace deal. I think Zelensky has accepted the fact that peace negotiations need to happen. But what he's doing is trying to angle for increased Western assistance to boost Ukraine's leverage. And he argues, I think rightly, that doing so would give the best chance for a good and fair and lasting peace deal. The Ukrainians don't want a situation where Russia just uses a temporary pause as a period for rearmament and then further aggression against Ukraine. So the Ukrainians are pushing for more aid. They've gotten the somewhat loosened restrictions on missile strikes in Russia, and they're continuing to push for more long-range strike capabilities and other aid.
Bill, you have a question.
Yes, John, welcome back. Are the reports of part of the agreement for a potential ceasefire that NATO troops would be positioned along a ceasefire line, is that credible? Is that something that NATO is willing to do, a risk that NATO is willing to take?
Yeah, I don't think the Trump administration would do this. There've been a lot of different proposals from out of Trump world. I don't think Trump himself has really blessed any of them. But that's one thing that was floated is NATO troops along the ceasefire line, but notably absent from that would be U.S. troops. So personally, I don't think that's such an arrangement would be feasible without a U.S. commitment. But we'll have to see. And personally, I don't think Russia would be wild about NATO troops within Ukraine.
Negotiation. Another headline from London following that meeting of the three presidents. Well, one president-elect and two presidents. Are Ukrainians ready to give up land in exchange for peace? This is a column from the senior foreign correspondent of the Telegraph, Roland Oliphant. In a fractious democracy, some are against talks with Russia, while others would live in a smaller Ukraine, but in a happier and safer one, writes the senior foreign correspondent. If Ukraine is to end the war, he goes on to reason, it will probably have to sacrifice portions of its territory. Moscow occupies parts of the eastern Donetsk, Luhansk, Kherson, and Zaporizhia, and has demanded their entirety in any ceasefire agreement, and Crimea is part of that package. On the back foot across the front line, Ukraine has little chance of evicting Russia's forces. Does that sound like a territory that Ukraine can give up, John? Are they preparing this for the front lines? Are they Is there any evidence of them repositioning themselves over these last weeks?
So currently, no. There's no posture change on either side that would suggest readiness for a ceasefire. They're continuing to fight hard. What Zelensky has said on the land issue is that he'd be willing to stop trying to get back the occupied territories by force and instead basically try to do so through diplomatic means. This would be de facto recognizing that they're not going to rejoin Ukraine anytime soon, if ever. But Ukraine would not take the painful step of recognizing these territories as Russian. And importantly, in exchange for that concession, the Ukrainians want membership in NATO for their entire territory. And they say that the Article 5 guarantee of collective defense would apply to the Ukrainian-controlled territory. So basically, they're willing to compromise on land to a degree, but they want a really ironclad security guarantee in exchange for that.
Bill, you have a question.
Yes, the U.S. recently agreed to allow Ukraine to launch long-range strikes using U.S. weaponry. Have there been any reports of those weapon systems being used since Ukraine has launched that return strike with the intermediate range ballistic missile into Ukraine? And if so, do you think they have been effective?
So Ukraine, since receiving the permission in November, they have launched some ATACMS and Storm Shadow strikes. So these are the U.S. provided ballistic missiles and the British provided air launch cruise missiles, targeting things like an ammo depot, a command and control site, a Russian airfield, and probably some S-400 systems around there. And so they've had some success in hitting those targets. I don't think there's been a huge impact on fighting in the Kursk region, which is really what the Biden decision. The immediate goal there was to try to support Ukrainian forces in Kursk and help them hold on to that territory and to destroy North Korean troops and kind of deter Russia and Pyongyang from receiving more of those troops for the Russian war effort in against Ukraine. So I don't think there's been a huge impact, in part because of Ukraine's very limited missile stocks. I think we probably provided somewhere in the range of low hundreds ATACMS missiles. And so Ukraine has spent a lot of those. Russia intercepts some not insignificant portion of them. And same goes for the Storm Shadow and French Scout missiles, too. So I think if Ukraine's going to take full advantage of that, of its green light to strike in Russia, it will need more missiles. And this is something you've seen Zelensky continue to ask for, including the German Taurus missiles. And so for the Biden administration, incoming Trump perspective, I think that should be a key focus as they try to boost Ukraine's leverage to try to get a potential peace deal.
The 400,000 number, John, that I read you from the Telegraph, have you had that number before? Is there any articulation of what that means? Killed, wounded, captured, any breakdown that you've seen?
Yeah, so there are a lot of numbers floating out there around since the war began about Ukrainian and Russian casualties. I think Zelensky has tended to offer numbers on the lower side. And so, obviously the figures he gave can't be independently confirmed. If I had to guess, give an informed guess, I think they'd probably be higher, perhaps somewhere in the range of 100,000 killed and obviously more wounded. But these figures are very low confidence assessments.
So we don't know. Have you seen anything like this before from Kyiv? Because I don't follow it as closely as you. And Bill and I have talked for weeks about how we don't get any casualty numbers from Kyiv.
Yeah, the last figure he gave some months ago was something like 32,000 killed. Recently, just last week, a Ukrainian war correspondent reported that general staff data had 70,000 killed and another 35,000 or so missing. You probably assume that most of those missing are also killed and just haven't been confirmed dead. And then back in September, there was a Wall Street Journal report that cited a Ukrainian internal assessment that said 80,000 killed and another 400,000 wounded. So I think, you know, those are kind of the ballpark of the numbers. And we, like I said, we don't have exact figures, and these are probably fairly low confidence assessments.
The numbers are all humbling and have guaranteed that the recovery from this war will be generations, not years. We're going to turn to the battlefield itself when we come back. Bill Raggio, Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, my colleague and co-host, and we're speaking with John Hardy, who watches the Ukraine conflict for the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.